The intent of this whole week is the study of marriage, the study of male-female relationships, the study of why female, why male. So try to get to some basis of understanding of so that we can all participate in the joy of the bride. It's in ancient, and it's not anybody's fault here because we didn't teach about it, but in ancient Israel, the worst slap that you could make, it's like everything in Israel, even the temple services, had to stop for a wedding. And there was, if any, even illness, you know, and every other thing, and in all the ceremonies and stuff and fasts, if you're ill or something, nursing mothers are exempted. Nobody's exempted from a wedding. And I would ask those of you who, for whatever reason, didn't make it on Friday, I would ask you to seriously consider that from our standpoint, the wedding is everything. It's why we exist. It's why we're here. And the idea that there would be an opportunity to see that spiritually manifested in a natural celebration is something that I would highly exhort all of you to. You're robbing yourself, you're robbing us, and you're robbing God if you're not making it. I'm not asking you to come off your deathbed, but please, the next major, I mean, we're going to, each night this week is something, but like Monday night is going to be, well, somebody else is taking the married couple out, and but Tuesday is when we meet here, and it's all about wedding stuff. Wednesday we meet up in the Rutledges, and it's going to be a roast. I mean, it's a typical roast. We're going to roast the snot out of the bride and the groom.
It's all very tastefully done.
Tastefully done, I'm sure, since Liz is the chairman. You got to know that it's got to be really in good taste if Liz is the chairman.
We all have so much taste.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's assuming we would recognize good taste if we saw it. I mean, what can you expect from white trash or black trash?
Trash.
Trash.
The thing that I thought was the neatest, or the thing that struck me the neatest at the wedding party night was when you were talking about, you know, we always talk about resting, but when you were saying, you know, it's our job to make Susan see that she doesn't have to do anything and all she has to do is rest all week. And it was such a great picture of that all the time, you know, that right, that actually no one has anything to do, that everybody's job is to make sure everyone stays at rest.
That's right. Really, the thing that I don't know if it touched you, is it because you couldn't see her face, but when I first said what I said about the bride's mother, you know, this poor old woman that, you know, she didn't know what's going on. She just came down from New Jersey or somewhere.
I love it.
Somewhere, yeah, some turn of really trip.
Someplace out down in South Egypt, one of the provinces in South Egypt. And she came here, right, and she had on her little dress and her little makeup and her little hair and her little glasses and her little jewelry and all that stuff. And she who the hell are these people? But you could, when I said to her what I did, I said, you know, about the ceremony could not start until the bride's mother was seated at rest. Her face, I mean, she something in her was touched. She knew it. It was really neat to see that, her face be touched by that. So.
Her dancing caught up in it too. I mean,
he went.
Great blessing. He had a great blessing.
Yeah, he came and talked to me afterwards, and he's a newspaper editor. Did you know that?
Well,
reason not too small in Wichita Falls. He's the editor of the paper up there. Anyway, he apparently had investigated us because he came up. No, just now, right now. Because he came up to me afterwards and he was beaming and he says, "Don't worry, I'm not going to write anything bad about you now."
Oh, we were worried before.
He apparently had done a, you know, something, and
it was Gene.
Yeah, Gene. Gene did it. Anybody else? But please, I beg of you, it's with great This is a time in which you have to set aside every other agenda that you may participate in the joy of the bride and let her see that you're participating in it. It's a time of winnowing. Things may change, but if you, I mean, I beg of you to put aside, to say, I set aside, Father, I set aside everything that I might participate in the joy of this experience. Well, fundamentally, a marriage, male-female stuff, is a parable. For those of you who have been married one or more times,
you're looking at me?
You're talking to me?
You know that the song that they played during the wedding was one that, was played during Rick and I's wedding. The wedding song?
You're kidding.
Yeah, the wedding song.
I didn't know there was any tweet.
Mr.
It was in a room, okay?
Mr. Awareness. Mr. Awareness.
But it was like I was listening to the words of the song, and I thought, I heard the melody, but I've never heard this song before. The words just...
That's yeah. Great words.
Yeah, there was, no false people to listen to, and I was kind of going, oh my God, this is great. I never heard this song before. Yeah,
that's
great.
That's neat. The idea that we wouldn't literalize the parable. Now, to literalize the parable is what everything that we do that gets us in trouble, everything we do that gets us involved in idolatry is to literalize a parable. Jesus said all things are in a parable. The highest parable there is, or the mystery, is a wedding, is a marriage. Now, whether it's food, food's a parable. Whether it's the way we breathe, breathing is a parable. Whether it's the way a tree grows is a parable. Whether the way wheat grows is a parable. The making of wine and the vine is a parable. Every aspect of our life is a parable. If we give importance to any aspect of our life, we are worshiping it, and we are literalizing the parable. Now, the one that's most difficult not to literalize is marriage, or love, or the male-female relationship. Because you become so totally emotionally involved, it brings up every molten image. It brings up every fiery image of emotion that's in you, and it causes that to come to the forefront, and it's tested as to whether or not you're seeing, or you're seeing God, or you're worshiping an idol. Now, the reason that it separated herself is because of the idea of romance, or the idolatry of romance. But I beg of you that you would look at yourself to see how much you have literalized the parable with regard to the idolatry of romance, or male-female, or sex. Sex is a parable. There are five words in the Greek for the word love. I can never remember them all, but let me try. The one that's the most insidious, the most evil, and it's never even in the same breath as love in the Greek or in the Bible, is stergo. And that's the Greek word for self-love. And that's considered to be a sin. Now it's considered to be something you exalt. Stergo, in the original, in the early Greek, the early Christian and in the old Judaic religions, was a sin, stergo, self-love. But in our culture, it's emphasized, it's glorified, it's in the self. Go to 1 John chapter 4.
You want my book?
No, I do not want anybody to read a Bible upside down. No, her Bible was upside down, but she was acting like she was reading it. It's called phoniness. It's called hypocrisy. It's called...
All right, I think he gets a picture.
Treachery.
Treachery.
Tough room.
1 John chapter 4, verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. Now, that's not Stergo. Obviously, everybody, otherwise, you know, that's not self-love. The word there is agape, which means love at the expense of yourself. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. Now, again, that word there is agape. It means love at the expense of yourself. But we are taught in our society, we are taught salesmanship. We are taught how to use another person or persons as a means to our own ends. You understand that? When you go to, I mean, you go to any kind of a sociology or psychology class, you go to really in a political class, you major in political science, any kind of civics, what you are taught how to use people as a means to your own ends. And it may be very glorious ends in your mind, but it's still how to use people. That's the art of psychology. The art of politics is how to use people. Can you hear that? You know what I'm talking about? That cannot have any in it, any component of love. It's impossible for you to try to manipulate people in any way and have in that conversation the word love. Now, I would beg of you to consider that in your relationships with people as an individual, as a boyfriend, girlfriend. If you are in any way trying to manipulate that other person towards your end for any purpose, no matter how glorious that purpose it is, it can't be agape, it's stergo, and it's masquerading. It cannot be the love, let us love one another, but it's stergo, let us manipulate other people for my ends. It cannot be negotiated with, it cannot be debated with, it must go to the cross the instant it's recognized. There's no other place that's more clear where that more clearly take place is than in a relationship. It happens 24 hours a day. How you begin to manipulate your partner in the name of love. And it's pure evil. You understand that? Now, it cannot be this then. It's the idea then. Here's what you're saying. If you love me, you would do this. Now, you may not be dumb enough to use those exact words. But, in essence, you are saying, prove your love to me by taking this action. If you love me, you would do this. Right. That's evil, pure evil. And it must be seen as evil and taken to the cross. Now, I want you to see how often you do that, even in friendships. How often you do it with your children. How often parents do it. How often children do it to parents. If you love me, you would do this. That is, I mean, if we could go opposite, that's the opposite of the love of the Bible. That's exactly the opposite. It's stergo. The other kind of, what are the other kinds of love? Stergo, self-love, obvious. It's the love that you see Ben doing. Excuse me, but he just happens to be handy. It's the love that says, I am a need machine, and you must satisfy my need to prove to me that you love me. That's what all little children would like, but they don't. They hate it. They hate getting by with it. it's the test. If they can get by, it's the earliest age. If they can get by with that, then you've lost the battle as a parent. Unless you address it quickly in their childhood, you will have created a monster in the name of your own love. You understand that? Now, but it all in the English language, it all goes in the name of love. You see how confusing that is? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So he uses the word love with this evil, and then he uses the word love, well, I love God, or God loves me, or something.
I love this donut.
Huh?
I love this donut.
Oh, I love this donut.
It just muddies the water, you don't know.
It just makes it crazy. I promise you, in the English language, if you ever hear anyone speak of their love for God, you can expect, you know that they expect to be paid for it. If you can ever hear anyone speak of their love for humanity, people always say, oh, I love people. That's the damnedest lie in the history of the universe. You love people that meet your idolatry, but put someone in that equation that doesn't meet your little idol of what a people should be, and you're a terror.
You hate
him. You want to kill him. Why lie? Why play the game? You don't love people. Nobody loves people. You love the idea that they would meet your idolatry. Oh, I'm out here because I love people. Oh, God. Do you understand how sickening that is? To anybody that has any spiritual understanding? Nobody here has ever said they love people, have
they? No.
I said I'm a people person.
Crystal, I've heard you say you love people, Crystal. Yes.
Give that on tape.
As a matter of fact,
yes.
And I've heard, you know who else? Let me tell you who I've heard in the room say they love people, okay?
You had to ruin
it. Daryl was
blame
yes.
You, you're to blame.
Laid low.
Huh?
If she just laid low.
Yeah. I've heard Liz say it.
Liz said that?
Liz said it. I've heard, you know who else I've heard? But I've heard Rick say it.
It'd be something if I did say that.
I've heard Rick say he loves people. I've heard Gary say he loves people. Now that's a damnable lie if I ever heard one.
Gary, he's a giddy guy.
I've heard Burnett say he loves people. What was that?
Well, because we just heard him say how much he hated people the other night.
I know. But can you see that how that goes? How terrible that lie is? They stergo people. They like people. They love people if the people meet their idolatry, if the people meet their ends. If they are able to, you'll always hear people say, I'm a salesman because I love people.
Yeah. I know, I've always loved every salesman I ran across.
Well, this is interesting that this should be up tonight, because Saturday after we left the wedding, it was Friday, thank you. It was a big deal for my sister to keep in, just because my sister, who she is. And so I said, we will be there to get him at 10 o'clock. And the time was drawing near, and I said, Mike, it's time to go. And he said, okay. And I went to get my purse, and I came back, and he was helping out with some candles and stuff. I said, we gotta go. He said, okay, let me just get this. We're going out. I'll take this with me. And then I walked to the car, and he was walking back in. He said, anyway, I thought it was time to go, and he was helping out. And so by the time we got to the car, I said, no, we're going to be late. And I mean, 10 o'clock, and we're not going to make it. So, of course, we drove up a bad hill to try to make it. We didn't make it.
You got a ticket.
But no, we didn't get a ticket. But what I said to him was, I ask you to do one thing for me.
Uh-oh.
And put other people before me.
Uh-oh.
And so, you know.
Sounds familiar?
But I never, I mean, I never really understood
before. But you understand that it's Sterico?
Yes.
I mean, because, because that issue exists only in your mind.
You see,
we almost broke up our engagement. I mean, I threw this ring in his face because he didn't want me to order mushrooms one night because we wouldn't have enough, because if I ordered mushrooms to go with my dinner, we wouldn't have enough to leave a proper tip. And I said, who would you rather see happy? This total stranger or me?
Remind me not to
take that. I never got it before.
When I got home Friday night, I was laying in bed thinking about that. For me, that was the one sharp, that was the one sharp point in the whole evening was the way you talked to him. I'm not saying that to Jeb. It's just, it really stood out to me. It was like, ooh. I mean, it was like, the guy was trying to help. We needed the help, and it was like you were.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I feel this pressure from my sister, and
any arguments that Ben and I have are exactly that. That kind of deal. I had a thing in my head.
That was secondary.
Well, but I mean, but it's still the pressure. She wasn't there saying to you, blah, blah, blah. I mean,
right.
It was in your head saying, I've got to live up to this ideal, and if you're not living up to this ideal, then I'm going to be mad at you.
There's nowhere to be seen.
You know what?
This comes up
But the thing is, see, it's like, you're like an easy point woman. I mean, you're like,
You're so far out.
No, but it's don't condemn yourself for it. I mean, you can get yourself on a trip, but I mean that's what Tyra sees in you is this incredible thing that's explosive and wonderful. And once you get rid of this, I should be this way kind of thing. And so, just let it. Just take the risk. Let it be always. Don't worry about whether you've done it right or wrong. But by the foolishness of preaching, men are saved. It's like I had no idea that taking thought for myself was the essence of evil until I saw it. All of a sudden I woke up one morning and said, my God, I'm pure evil. All I do is take thought for myself. I had no idea that the intent of God was to abandon myself so I have no thought, I don't think about myself at all. Until I saw it. And so till I was confronted with this cross that says, if the cross of Christ is real, I've lost the right to myself. To every element of the right to myself. Well, we each believe that our situation is so unique, is so special, that whoever said this stuff about abandoning yourself didn't know what he was talking about. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I promise you, he knew what he was talking about. That the essence of freedom is the abandonment of self, taking no thought for yourself whatsoever. And in doing so, it doesn't mean you're going to get it right. What's in fact going to happen, you're going to end up having to confess a lot. You're going to have to run around and say, you know, forgive me. I mean, I remember this specific instance because it's with such clarity. You know, Vic is an explosive character. He's got, you know, he's a crack cocaine addict. He's got AIDS. He's got this. He's that. Before any of that happened, he was on a short fuse. So all of a sudden, I run around and tell Vic to take no thought for himself, to prophesy. Well, he's working for the foundation. All of a sudden, all he does is just blow up all the time and cuss out Pete. One time it happened, as he was coming around a corner, slamming stuff, throwing stuff around, and Rebecca was standing there. And she was frozen in fear from seeing this much anger come forth out of one person and this much cursing. It was, my God, you know, and this flash before me said, you know, Ole, it's your fault. You're going to screw up this little girl's life forever. Probably Vic's going to go out and kill himself, and it's all your fault because you're telling people to abandon themselves. But the fruit of it was incredible because I sat down and talked to Vic, and I said, can you imagine what your explosiveness and your lack of love has done to Becca? And he just started crying, and he went, and he had to go and ask Becca to forgive him. And it was like, Rebecca understood. She beamed. She was touched in a way that she'd never been touched before. Satan meant it for evil, but God turns it to good when there's the combination of the abandonment of self, of taking no thought for what you're going to say, whether or not to massage it. I'm so sick of people massaging their words. It's so boring. And you see, and the less you massage your own words, the more it's evident you see other people when they massage it. You can see through them like a pane of glass. And it's the opposite of love. Because they have a predefinition of what love looks like to them, and therefore their definition of love is stergo. It's what will meet their need. Here, nobody in their right mind would define love by what we see around here. I mean, we see fights and anger and people, but something mysterious takes place. It's the abandonment of self. And in that is the divine love. That's faith. Faith isn't me trying to trying to imitate Jesus. That's just me being a bad actor. Faith says, if I explode, if I give myself over, if I take no thought, that I believe that Christ will reveal himself in me without any effort on my part. That's faith. It's no longer a commodity to get something. It's an expression of life itself. That's love.
Well, it's not I exploded. And it was neat because later on that night I was up in my room and I was praying and I caught myself praying for my flesh, and I thought, my God, this is gross, this is sick, you know, and I said, this is semen. And I think it was the first time that I realized it was a semen, but what I was praying for, that yeah. it was evil.
That's great. Stergo. Everybody got stergo locked in their mind? Self-love?
Is a sacrificial agape love, I know it's not the same as a parental sacrificial love?
No.
Couldn't be the same.
No. We'll get to that now.
Okay.
First one is stergo. We go from the worst. What's the next one? The next one from the standpoint of the one that's most confused is eros. Eros is lust. It doesn't necessarily mean sex. It's desire to have your own needs satisfied. But it comes in the name of it's without consciousness. It could be sexual, but it could be anything. It's eros. You understand?
It's a difference.
Well, you can have the same kind of a love for the same. You can have eros for an objective, or for an object, or for a plan, or for an agenda, or for a political cause, or for it's something that you've sold, you've given yourself over
to. It's like
to.
a burning for it, even though it may not be a person.
Yeah, I love my job.
I love my job, but. It's like you've given yourself to something. It's Isaiah 57 where it says, you've discovered yourself to another other than me. That can be in sex, in anything where you've given yourself over. Okay? Now, it's what the scriptures call lust. It's all over the place. I mean, it doesn't need to be described. I mean, does anybody...
Without it, there would be no advertising.
Without it, there'd be no advertising. Well, it may be advertising, but no one would buy anything. Without it, there'd be no commerce, is the right way to say it.
Yeah, so there has to be a belief in incompletion.
Right, right. The first requirement of eros is that I lack something. What the hell's going on here? Am I just boring? Is that what it is?
No.
Ask them. We're still here.
Huh?
So ask them. We're still here.
Yeah.
Take five. The next word that's translated as love is Philadelphia.
Philadelphia?
Of course. That's why they named it.
That's a city of brotherly love.
That's why they named it that.
Really?
And it means... Well, but it doesn't mean brother love. It means friendship love. More so than family love. There's another word that means it's another word that means family. But the point of it is we got Stergo, Ergos, Philadelphia, Familiar, Filial, or whatever it is, but the point, the idea of those four is simply a different aspect of the self. You know, the Stergos, Eros, Philadelphia, and Familiar, Filial, or the other one that means family. There's friendship and family, and I get them confused right now. I didn't study for it. But those four all have as a definition a part of you. The idea that the common cliche about a friend is, you know, friendship is someone that, a friend is someone that knows everything about you and loves you anyway, or likes you anyway. Well, don't you understand? You're the subject of the sentence. You see, I mean, it's still you. It's still an aspect of you. It's still someone that you could risk being you with, and that sounds real great in certain circles, but it's just new age bullshit. It's just
It's what? It's Stuart Smalley. It's just this make-believe self-help bullshit.
Well, anyway, it's the idea that it's still an aspect of you as the subject of your sentence. Now, the only way that you will not be the subject of your sentence is with agape. Now, that can't be faked. Agape is divine love, but it means love at the expense of you. And it means like, it doesn't mean the heroic act like you go out and save somebody. You know, like you jump into freezing water and go save somebody. Agape has as its idea a continuance or abiding. So the idea, it can't be faked. You understand? That's why John said with perfect clarity, he said, they went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they no doubt would have continued with us. It's the long process of laying down your life for your brethren daily. It's not laying down your life for a stranger. That's easy. That's a program, and you can have identity from a program. But it's laying down your life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, year after year. That's where the agape is tested. Now, there will be a time when nobody ever thinks that love is one of these false things. Do you understand? It's like no one has ever worshipped a false god. But the test of whether or not these Stergo, Eros, Filial, Familial, whatever it is, our real is abiding. It's time, the passage of time in continuance. Now, that's why, again, in male-female relationships, in marriages, almost all marriages fail. They've always failed. The only difference between now and 40 years ago in the good old days in the old time religion is people are more honest. They've always been screwed up. The idea, you know, anybody that thinks there was an old time religion, I'm just give me that old time religion, just give me that old time idolatry. You know, understand that it's never worked. You've always, I mean, 50 more than, you know, obviously, if you defined a failure as two people not communicating but locked together in a house. See, that is a failure worse than divorce. It's slow death. But it's lack of courage. It's cowardice. Now, hear me. Almost 99.99% of the marriages, by the definition of God, are failures. They should be divorced. It's a joke. It's a living, walking joke. How long Think about your relationships you had in the past with people. What's the attraction of a one-night stand? It's because it's total eros. It doesn't have to be tested. Well, some of you are saying, well, that ain't all bad. If you're saying it ain't all bad, then it's total stergos. Do you understand? But you finally reach a point in maturity where you understand that all of those other forms of love, whether it's familial, whether it's friendship, whether it's eros, whether it's stergo, they only produce death. They produce vanity. They produce fertility. Now, what's going on now in the modern church, especially in the quote-unquote Bible churches and a lot of the Baptist churches, is a worship of the family kind of love. And it's created an environment in which there's a whole bunch of people that are afraid to be honest because they're afraid if they're honest with themselves and honest with their partners and honest in their church, they'll be perceived as failures. And so, I mean, you understand that the only kind of love that has any merit is agape, and that can only be revealed at the cross, and it can only be tested and abiding over a long period of time. Do you understand what you've done with everyone that you've left? Do you know in spirit the word divorce and the word murder are about the same? Spiritually, if you've left someone, you've murdered them. How many people have you murdered in your life? You may not accept that as a definition, but I challenge you to think about it. If he that is joined to the Lord is one spirit, and now we are members of that body, we are one, and it's not negotiable, it's from the foundation of the earth. If I then leave you for my own purposes, which by God I've been tempted, then I murder you. The only thing that has kept me, you understand, some of us have been together here, and I mean not necessarily in this room, but in this organization for... Angela's father and I have been together consistently, continually, since 1973. Now, that's amazing. To me, I didn't think we'd make it for 3 days. Especially because if we keep... You understand the risk of preaching that you don't hold anything back? That your only job is to prophesy, to say whatever's there 24 hours a day? The test of this thing called agape, the love that's tested, herein is the love of God perceived, that as he laid down his life, so we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Now the laying down of your life is awesome. Now, hear me. Eventually, that's what has to take place in a marriage. Otherwise, the marriage won't be real. Whatever the thing is, the eros has to be transformed. And that is incredible. That's what that's something that cannot be faked. It cannot be faked. You will know it in your partner. I mean, you can fake it to the world. You can fake it to those outside. But you can't fake it to each other. Now, again, we see in Susan and in Terry, we see that already there's been a transformation that it's more than eros. It's more than this initial attraction, because the engagement has lasted for 6 months or more, 9 months. And so there's some evidence, some credibility that it can last. Now, I beg of you, in each other, in relationships, and seek for the agape. see that the attempts to satisfy yourself, you know, the words that you would say, well, how could you do this to me if you love me, has to be seen as primary evil. Then that relationship can be transformed to a copy. You hear that? Now that's what it's only faith can probably, I mean, you understand, there's nothing you can do to cause it to happen. If Christ is not resurrected, if he is not your life in you, it can't happen because you don't have it in you. You can't do it. And you can only sustain the act for so long. Don't be in this, risk everything all the time. Now, let's go on to some other. How can you get away from the idea of seeing the other person as a means to fulfill yourself?
Am I failure, for one thing.
Harry was married for 9 years to a, I mean, in the whole, you know, by his own words, the marriage was a joke from the beginning. And yet they sustained it. They continued. I mean, I guess I'm asking, what I'm asking is, when do you have a successful relationship?
Here and there. I mean,
so you don't know the answer to that. There's no good answer to that.
You can't know when you
would die. I would think if you had a successful relationship, there wouldn't be any reason to, you know, I mean, you wouldn't have to be depending on anything in any given moment. I mean, that's the whole.
You wouldn't
place
ever.
You have to be in, isn't it?
You'd never know.
I think the ideal relationship would be when both of you are serving God rather than serving each other.
Right.
And you don't need each other.
The success is defined in the very first part of Genesis, Genesis 2. It's just real brief, so. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. And so the thing that has to take place in this male-female relationship, is that you have to stop looking at each other to satisfy each other's needs. And you have to give yourself to the new thing. The new thing is the marriage. Now, I mean, that's really hard to do. Because everything in you desires and demands you be satisfied. And so what happens, the love then is, believe it or not, love becomes synonymous with knowledge. Love and knowledge eventually become the same thing. Because you know not to trust the emotion, and you know to see the knowledge of him. And the fulfillment of it. Do you understand me? And the idea that you both could be naked and unashamed is what we see here. We see it in what we call the hot seats. When you can be naked among the brethren, when you can be open and know nothing hidden and yet be not shamed. without shame.
Because then otherwise, the risk that it's involved if you're trying to protect even a little piece or maintain some little tie otherwise, I mean, you won't say something that might be hurtful. You won't say something that might reveal yourself or your, because then you'll be risking that little weird thing that you want, you know, whether it's even like compliments or, I mean, anything weird like that.
In effect, love is like a faucet. And you open the spigot and the water flows out. Love flows, and I'm almost afraid to say this, but love is almost a decision. Oh, it's a decision because you know that everything else is screwed up, and so it's not really a decision like I'm going to make a decision for Christ, but it's the idea that you know everything else can't be trusted. And so you decide, I can then give myself, I can open the spigot, I can afford to be naked, I can afford to be open, because I know that nothing else works. I know that to withhold is to deaden. I know from experience, I know from seeing it here a million times, I know from my own life, I know from seeing it right now, to withhold is to cause death, to deaden. I know also that no matter what it is that I say, no matter what it is that I think that I'm going to protect myself from not saying something, or protect the other person, or protect Tyra if I know that's a lie. I know that what I'm really trying to do is protect myself. So I know that all of my little defense mechanisms are wrong. So therefore, in that context then, I know that love is a decision. And it's really tough. Because, it's so tempting to say, well, if you love me, you do this. And you don't have to say it. You manipulate it.
Well, it's all, we're all taught hurtful words mean equal non-love or whatever.
And I was thinking about when you were talking about giving, we've done this at Pentecost, we're talking about giving to the new thing. And, if your focus is giving to that new thing instead of to the other person, then there can't be the stergos of expecting something back, because there's nothing, there's not another person on the other side. That new thing isn't an actual being that can provide you something back.
Right.
It has to be.
Well, really the only thing that's lacking is the childlike obedience. It's just to do it. That's why these incredible things happen, when missionaries go to certain parts of the world and they just, maybe they've only been able to translate and leave, what they usually do is they start with the book of John, almost always, all missionaries, and they translate it. And there's these great stories about, maybe a missionary is only able to translate the first 7 books of John. And the guy died, and nobody knew he died, and and they come back, somebody comes back 3 years later, and there's a fully operating, quote-unquote, New Testament church with all the rules of behavior and everything happening. Because all I knew is that all those people knew is the childlike obedience. It's like, this isn't a manual. This is a what is. And it's a totally different concept. And the same is true in a marriage. No matter how bad they are here, the marriages in this group are the best I've ever seen them anywhere. I really mean that.
Amen.
No matter how bad you sometimes think their marriage is, it's light years beyond.
Well, you said that it sounded like we were married. that's why she looked at me and she's like,
I think the recognition of that is part of what you would read in Matt's letter. You know what I mean? That's what I felt like was dawning on Matt when I read that, is that, wow,
what's going on here is the center of the universe, and everything else is revolving around it.
Yeah, in his letter he was talking about relationships, you know, in the world and how it's leaven and things that go on, you know, being nice and not the suffering and people not counting that as the joy in their relationship instead of seeing it as the detriment. It was, I mean, it was a high impact letter.
Well, I just wanted you to at least tonight, in terms of this strategy or this time or this week of looking at what love is, I guess I just wanted you, and what relationships are, I want you to first to see that if they're real, you're not the subject of the sentence. And the idea that you would manipulate someone with love makes you a whore. That's what a prostitute does. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough. That's marriage 101. Hopefully by the end we'll...
Question. Are Susan and Terry still in separate Bible studies? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. They're in sitter groups. So.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but are they still in separate sitter groups, mm-hmm. right, as of now? Mm-hmm. Ooh, weird.
They better be, or they're going to be in deep trouble.
I don't know where this fits on the subject of boy-girl relationships, but when we were talking about a man and a woman both being of service to God, that being the ideal relationship, I remember that several times I've had the experience of, doesn't happen very often, I've had the experience of seeing or feeling that I was in harness, like in a train or a team of mules or Clydesdales or something like that. That I was in a harness and that somebody else, Rick or you or Barbara or somebody else, was in that same team.
Yeah.
That's when I mean, that for me is the greatest feeling for me now, is that realization. And every once in a while it happens.
Yeah. It was really neat Friday night at the wedding because, you know, even though it wasn't the same as like Tabernacles, walking into Tabernacles, like the glow of the room and the way Susan was glowing and everything was just, I mean, it was incredible, you know, and it was so, I mean, you could see so much love between her and Terry and even the people that were there that had never been here before, and you could see the surprise, how blown away they were, you know, and I had this lady sitting behind me who I don't know, she had her child with her and she was talking about celebrating, you know, the marriage for 8 days, that's what we did here. And, you know, I was listening to her as she was talking, you know, telling him and talking about, you know, this thing and describing it. And it was really intense. I mean, yeah. It was just real different to have somebody you didn't know talking about you. You know, and it was kind of like, all right, but it was real neat.
Well, would any of this bring up anything that anybody thinks they need to talk about?
Well, I mean, I can think back to crappy things I thought relationships were, and, you know, went through one and went through another and went through another, and trying to work it and analyze and go with my feelings. No, well, that didn't work. Let's go with this and let's go with that. And I mean, it's kind of scary to, you know, see a new thing, you know, but to know that I can, something, you know, everything that I worked, you know, thought I had to work with before was just crap.
Yeah. It's really true, and it's true for all of us, me as well as everybody else, that when it comes to this subject, everything we thought we knew is wrong.
That's for sure. Amen. That's the one thing that's for sure.
And that the only hope we have is the abandonment of ourselves into this new thing.
Also, you know, in a relationship, the two married people that are conflicting all the time, children caught in the crossfire, yeah. How unfair it is to them, and how if that child grows up and marries right away, they'll probably repeat the same mistake.
There's no doubt.
And
to the third and fourth generation.
So only is the marriage a picture?
It's a picture of...
It's a picture of this.
It's a picture of time and space. I mean, the marriage is the reason that time and space exist. I mean, in all the parables that are connected with, and we'll see over the week, there's a whole lot of great Talmud stories, and it causes you to understand the stories of the words of Christ about marriage. But all of the things like that the bride is the companion antagonist, and that's what help me means, companion antagonist. My God, that's, you know. What that means is that it's like, it gives a new meaning to antagonism. It's, you don't have to worship it, you just see that it's necessary, you can do it in a new way. I mean, you can say, and you don't have to say it as a way, as instruments to kill or to maim in an argument. You can understand that the suffering isn't strange, it's what's supposed to happen.
And also, in my experience in marriage, is just that it's the same thing that goes on in a marriage, it's just a microcosm of the same thing that goes on here, the things that I worship, you know, and he's over here in diametrically opposed to that, and I just come up against him. I would do that here, it's just that he's in my face 24 hours a day, whereas, you know, other people would be less, but it's, you know, it's the same mechanism.
The real function of marriage is to be a picture to the body. And if it's not shared, if it's held inward, then it robs the body and it robs God.
A picture of,
no matter what it is, no one says you had to be a good picture. It's so that whatever is going on is what's seen. And it's seen that what we are is we are married to another. We are married to Christ. We are members one of another. What happens in a marriage, in each of the marriages and each of the relationships really, is a different aspect of that revelation. And if it's shared, yeah, life can come from it. It's held in, it deadens.
Rarely will it be life to you.
It never will be.
It's the stuff that goes on for you. Some of you may never understand why. But if it's shared, then you know.
Yeah, that which is darkness to you. I mean, in fact, in order for it, it's almost a sure bet, in order for it to be life to someone else, it has to produce death in you. Otherwise, you know, when you make the idea of the positive, the problem with the concept of positive confession is that it's deadening instead of life-giving. So, because, you know, we which live are always delivered unto death. We die daily, that the life may be, you know, that the life might come forth.
Confess the deadening, you know, so maybe you see the deadening effect of holding on to something so it won't cause not what I think suffering in another person.
Yeah.
Because it'll mess up the project, you know, whatever I think the project is, you know, I'm working on.
Well, could there be any greater situation to cause a person to die than in the marriage?
Well,
I could imagine if there would be.
No. You could live here on the block.
Being a Levite, really, working for Oli.
Anytime you're in the same house with someone.
Working in the lair.
Try moving in with, you know, living with four homeless people.
So how does sex fit on Noah's? This is one of those, I mean, I hate to break into a serious note again, but that's the ultimate in self-seeking, so I don't see how it really fits. I'm confused on how that fits, and what we're saying is...
Okay, well, that's why in the marriage, the type that we're going through with Terry and Susan, mm-hmm, that, like, the kids are living with them, so that the sexuality is always a type of the... It's the down payment on what heaven is like and what eternity is like. It's the eighth day. It's the joining on the eighth day. It's the explosion when time ends. No, again, orgasm is the eighth day. It's the breaking of the.
That's what I thought you said.
Yeah.
That's the eighth. Yeah,
Is it for any other purpose than procreation?
Of course. It's not for procreation. I mean, that's the last thing. No, I mean, that's the last thing that God wants is a bunch more flesh running around.
We need some more people. Let's make some more
grasshoppers running around. Yeah, we're late. Take a big guy.